Well, on Sunday evenings, we've been looking at the passion of Christ as told by John, who's an eyewitness to these things. And as we saw last time, Jesus really is dead. So when Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, "It is finished." And bowing his head, he gave up his spirit. He really is dead. But just to make sure, John tells us in chapter 19, verse 34, one of the soldiers, he rams his spear up into Jesus' chest cavity. And out gushes blood and water. And the implication is that Jesus has been dead for some time. The blood has already separated into a watery layer of plasma, serum, and then this denser, heavier layer of red blood cells. Hence what John witnesses, the blood and the water. But one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and immediately blood and water came out. So the message is unmistakable. Jesus is dead. So is that the end? Can we all go home now? Well, if it is the end, then the details about Jesus' burial are unnecessary. Why do we need to know about Joseph of Arimathea, who took down the body? Why do we need to hear about how he and Nicodemus, verse 40, took the body of Jesus, bound it in strips of linen with spices, as the custom of the Jews is to bury? And why do we need to know that Jesus was buried in a new tomb, which Matthew tells us was hewn out of the rock? Why? Why do we need to know these things? Because although it is finished, it's not the end. So please come with me to that reading which we had, and we're going to look particularly at John chapter 20 and the first 10 verses. Please have those verses open in front of you. And what we'll do is simply follow the narrative, and then we'll draw the lesson. So what's the story? Well, verse 1 of chapter 20. Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early while it was still dark. So on the Sunday morning, before first light, Mary Magdalene sets off for the tomb. Now, John tells us in chapter 19, verse 25, that she was standing at the cross. And Matthew 27 tells us that while all the burial preparations were being made, she was sitting opposite the tomb. She was watching while Jesus' body was being buried. She watches as that great stone is rolled across the mouth of the tomb, sealing in the body of Jesus. And if Mary's therefore the last to leave on the Friday, she's now the first to return on the Sunday. What does it tell you about Mary? Well, it tells you that she loves Jesus. She loves him with all her heart. And though he's gone, she'll do for him what she can. Now, all that remains of Jesus is his body. So she's up before the crack of dawn, hurrying to the tomb to finish those hurried burial preparations on the Friday night. She's going to anoint his body, embalm his body, do what she can for her beloved Lord. You get that sense, don't you, that she can't rest still. She can't sit still until she's done what she can for him. There's not much she can do. All there is just a body. But she'll do for him what she can, even though it's apparent she's facing impossible obstacles. After all, who's going to move that great stone? So Mary comes to the tomb. And she's not alone, although John doesn't record it here specifically. We're told elsewhere that she's accompanied by other women. And we do get that sense because John here says in verse 2, when Mary speaks, she uses the word we, so the other women are with her. And when she comes, she discovers, verse 1, that this great stone has actually been rolled away. Now think about that for a moment. It's a great circular stone, and it rolls down a sloping groove, sealing the body in. So it's very easy to close. Just set the momentum going and the stone will roll into the groove, sealing the tomb. Easy to close, so hard to open because you've got to roll it uphill. But the stone's been rolled back. By who? What does it mean? And there was a guard put on the tomb. Where have the guards gone? And in Mary's mind, there can only be one explanation. Verse 2, then she ran and came to Simon Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved and said to them, "They've taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." So whilst the other women linger at the tomb, Mary feels she has to do something. So she runs to the two senior disciples. She runs to Peter and John. And you can hear it in her voice, can't you? You can hear the distress. You can hear the panic. As far as she's concerned, the grave has been plundered. And there's that sense of, it's awful, isn't it? Even after he's dead, they still can't leave him alone. What else can they do to him? They've taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they've laid him. So Peter, verse 3, followed by John, they go to the tomb to see for themselves. Peter therefore went out, and the other disciple, and were going to the tomb. So they both ran together. They start off side by side. But soon, verse 4, John outruns Peter and arrives at the tomb first. Anyone here do cross country at school? Winter mornings, red thighs, wheezing lungs, lactic acid. For a certain generation, you know what I mean. You do sports at school, cross country. Anyway, we used to have a sports master who trained with the Chindits during the war. They were sort of a commando group. And so you can imagine what he was like. And when your will was failing and you were going up a hill, he'd suddenly leap out from behind a hedge and say, run, 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 and we'd all run. And if you started side by side, you know, you're about 3 miles into the run, you all slow down, you're all just jogging along. Soon, you'd stretch out in a long line and the front runners would disappear. You couldn't even see them. Well, they start off side by side, Peter and John. But John is the faster man. And he pulls away from Peter and arrives at the tomb first. Maybe Peter's the older man. Maybe Peter's a heavier build. You get this sense, don't you, Peter's a big man. Jesus will say later on that, Peter, when you were young, you could go where you wished. I don't know if I can go wherever I wish, but Peter could go wherever he wished because he's a big man. No one messes with Peter. And when the net is full, remember, he's the one who pulls it in. Maybe he's a big man, and it's a case of sort of Shane Williams and Ewan Murray, and a bigger, slower man. Maybe Peter's legs are failing him because he's carrying a burden that John is not. A troubled conscience. Well, John arrives first. Verse 5, and he, stooping down and looking in, saw the linen cloths lying there. Yet he did not go in. So John arrives at the tomb. He's there first. He stoops down. He looks in. Why doesn't he go inside? Why does he linger on the threshold? Is it because of what he sees? And there's something there that stops him in his tracks because he sees what he doesn't expect to see. Remember, these are real people. This is not some sort of story that someone's made up. These are real people. Why are they doing what they're doing? What does he see that he doesn't expect to see? Verse 5, and he, stooping down, looking in, saw the linen cloths lying there. And the word lying is used 3 times in verses 5, 6, and 7. John is saying, as he writes about this, here is something of great significance. Now, what has Mary said? They've stolen the body. But if they've stolen the body, would you expect to see the grave clothes? Well, of course you wouldn't. If you're stealing a corpse, the last thing you start to do is unwrap it and take off all the burial cloths and take away a naked corpse. You'd never do it, would you? You simply take the corpse, wrappings and all, and go. But it's not just that the grave clothes have been left behind. In verse 40, we're told, then they took the body of Jesus and bound it in strips of linen with the spices, as the custom of the Jews is to bury. So Jesus' body has been wound in a burial shroud. And woven into the folds of that burial shroud are the spices. Well, the burial shroud is still there, but it's not been unwrapped. It's not been unwound. Just that the body that's inside it is gone. Can you make sense of that? It's like an empty cocoon that's collapsed under the weight of the spices. There's no sign of disorder. No evidence that it's been unwound. No strips of cloth thrown around the tomb lying on the floor. There's no sign even that it's been touched. Only that the body inside it has gone. The chrysalis is empty and the butterfly has flown. Do you remember when Lazarus rose from the dead? Do you remember what they had to do? Jesus says to them, loose him from the grave clothes. When Lazarus comes out the tomb, he's got the grave clothes all around him and they have to unwind them and loose him. Well, here's a different order altogether. It's as though Jesus' body has passed through the burial shroud without disturbing it. That's why John stops in his tracks. The last thing in the world he expects to see, particularly after Mary tells him that they've stolen the body. He's looking on in wonder. Well, where's Peter? If you remember verse 3, Peter went out. He takes the initiative, doesn't he? John follows. And then verse 6, we read, then Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. That's Peter, isn't it? There's no hesitation. When he arrives, just goes straight in. And he saw the linen cloths lying there. So now there's another witness to the scene. John's telling us something, isn't he? He's saying by the mouth of two or three witnesses, everything is established. But Peter's now inside this low cave of the tomb. And inside he can see what John can't see. Verse 7. And the handkerchief that had been around Jesus' head, not lying with the linen cloths, but folded together in a place by itself. Again, it's something extraordinary, isn't it? Separate from the main burial shroud is another cloth. It's the one which was wrapped around Jesus' head. It looks like it's been folded up and put away. Job done. So what does it all mean? Verse 8. Then the other disciple who came to the tomb first went in also, and he saw and believed. John now understands. There's no sign of any disturbance, or violence, or robbery. So no one's stolen the body, but the body's gone. There can only be one explanation. Jesus is risen. Verse 9. For as yet they did not know the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. You see, that morning John didn't run to the tomb expecting to find it empty. He didn't say, it's the third day. I know what the scriptures say. It's the third day. He rises from the dead. When I get to the tomb, it'll be empty. This is also unexpected. We're told here that John and Peter hadn't yet understood those scriptures which foretold, which spoke of Jesus' resurrection. But now John is there. He sees. It's the light's beginning to dawn. He sees. He believes. And maybe now those scriptures are beginning to crowd his mind. The empty tomb, the empty shroud. He really is risen. And soon, and we'll come to this in the weeks to come, soon Mary will hear Jesus call her name. And by the day's end, Jesus will meet with his disciples in a locked room. Of course, one man will be absent, Thomas the skeptic. Thomas, who says, I won't be taken in. I don't believe these things. These things don't happen. Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails and put my finger into the print of the nails and put my hand in his side, unless it's physical, tangible, real, I will not believe. And of course, the next Sunday, Thomas receives that proof, doesn't he? The proof that he demands. And we come to the climax of this resurrection account as Thomas, in worship, falls before Christ. He says, my Lord and my God. And within days, this terrified group of broken disciples, they haven't packed up and gone home. They haven't appointed a new leader. On the contrary, we find them with lion-hearted courage. They're filling the world with this wonderful news that changes everything. That Jesus Christ, who was nailed to a cross, who was buried, who was dead, is risen. Many sealing their testimony with their own blood. Well, if Thomas's confession is the noonday, the dawn arrives with the empty tomb. My friends, stand with Peter and John. They're our witnesses this evening, aren't they? See it all through their eyes. Unravel the riddle. It's written in a very intriguing way, isn't it? It's not telling you the punchline, really, till you get there. It's saying, enter in, think, engage your mind. Everything else can stop. This can't. Listen, look, think. See what they saw. And believe. It's not just a story, a resurrection story. This is vivid. This is real. This is human. Mary's panic, John's sprint, Peter's boldness. Here are eyewitness accounts to a real event. So John says in these verses, he says, take the first stepping stone. And when you get there, take the next and the next. Until you're brought before Jesus Christ and are left worshipping my Lord and my God. So what should we learn tonight? Well, just two things. A word to Christians. Christian friend. You ever wonder if it's all true? Do you? And do you ever think, well, others may get home to glory, but not me. I've messed up so many times. And that sort of day-to-day living, does your mind cloud with so many questions and issues and troubles and heartaches? What shall we do? I think we need to read this passage. Read it today. If the Lord spares you and you know the hour or the day or soon when you're going to die, have it read to you on those last hours, those last days. Read this passage. Feel Mary's panic. I can see a woman like Mary, can't you? She's already all tight and knotted and upset by everything that's gone on. And I can see her just taking a look and saying, oh no, not this as well. And I can see her going to Peter and John and her pouring it all out. And then I can see Peter and John just looking at each other. They've stolen the body. Well, why don't you set off with Peter and run with Peter? Oh, but Peter's too slow, so I'm going to sprint past Peter and catch up with John. And I'm going to stop at the threshold. And I'm going to look into the tomb and see the linen cloths lying there. And then when puffed out Peter arrives, all sweating and heavy and blowing, well, go in the tomb with him and look. Because there are times I need the quietness of the cemetery. I need the cool of the tomb. I need to look and linger and see and understand and believe. Is it all true? It's a real tomb. A real burial shroud. It's lying on hard hewn rock. It's a fact. It's real. It's substantial. It's witnessed. Here are people who've seen it, who know, who've witnessed it. It wasn't what they were expecting. Because he's not here. He's risen. And that changes everything. Christian friends, at the heart of what we believe is an historical fact. It's a fact more fully attested than all the facts of the ancient world which we take for granted. No one invented the story of the empty tomb. No one was expecting this. He is risen. Which, of course, Christian friends, why you're a believer, isn't it? Why do you believe in the first place? It's because Christ met with you. And because he lives, you now live. And if he's risen, no matter how rubbish I am or how guilty I feel myself to be, then I'm forgiven. Stand at the cross. What does Jesus say? He says, it's finished. What's finished? The punishment your sins demand. So what God has punished once in Jesus, he's not going to punish a second time, is he? In you. Yeah, but how do I know that his justice really has been satisfied? Because he's risen. Paul puts it like this. He was delivered up because of our offences and was raised up because of our justification. If he is risen from the dead, it can mean only one thing. He's paid in full the price my sin demands. And if he's paid it in full, there's nothing more to pay, is there? Paid is the debt, and I, the debtor, go free. A little girl of 12. She was dying of cancer. She was a believer. She was a lover of Jesus Christ. Mum and dad said to her, as the time drew very close, trust in the love of God. She said, no. She said, I'm trusting in the justice of God. Jesus has been punished once for my sins. And God will not punish those sins a second time. The resurrection is God's declaration that justice has been done. Christian friend, my sins have been punished. God is satisfied. Justice is done. He requires nothing more. And it's an event, isn't it? A real flesh and bone event. So I can live all my days with the calm of sins forgiven. And Christian friend, is every day a trial? Jesus is risen. My future is not just some disembodied spirit floating in the sky. Because he's risen bodily, I too will rise bodily. A new body, a glorious body. It'll be immortal. It's prepared for the new heavens and the new earth. It's a glorious hope. So, Christian friend, live every day in the light of it. There's but a step between me and glory. Do you live like that? Do you live with your eyes upon all the troubles and you know what it's like? All the difficulties are like little dogs, aren't they, that snap at your heels and bite you and tear at you? Or you're looking to your glorious hope. There's just a few moments left. A few moments of shame, a few moments of trial, a few moments of trouble. That's all it is. Just a few blinks of the eye. And then, what? I shall be with him. I shall see him face to face. It's not about me and my little problems. It's all about him. And nothing, not even death, can separate me from him. What did he say? And he says to you tonight, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. So today, be like Mary. love him, adore him. Be the last to leave and the first to arrive. Do something, anything for Jesus. So the days he's given to you, the little blinks that are left, the days walking with him, loving him, looking to him, worshipping him, my Lord and my God. A word tonight, if you're not a Christian, if you're not a believer. I don't know, maybe you've gone to sleep up to this point, so it's time to wake up. Rick Otis, he took a rugby ball and he threw it to the audience. Someone caught it and threw it back. He did it again. And the ball returned. Then he put the rugby ball down. And he tossed out an imaginary rugby ball, which somebody caught, and threw back the imaginary rugby ball. He caught it. Threw it out again, came back. Threw it out again, came back. Then he said, it's not very exciting, is it? Rugby without the ball. And then he said, that's what life is like without Jesus. We've missed the whole point. Do you ever feel that? Somehow I've missed the whole point. I know something's going on, but I don't feel a part of it. I feel it passes me by. And I know life is about something, but I haven't caught up with it yet. What's it really all about? And everything I try to do and get involved in, well, I know I haven't really found it. Have you missed the whole point? Maybe if you're someone who's, you feel you're someone who's spiritual. Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism. But all their founders are dead. It's rugby without the ball. Only Jesus lives. Are you a disciple of Dawkins? A believer in Darwin? There is no God. Well, there's probably no God. Well, there is a God. We don't need God. But can a dead Charles Darwin sort out my life? And when I've messed it up, can he give me a new one? And can he deal with the guilt and the shame, which is the universal experience of us all? You have a personal history. I have a personal history. It's a weight. It's something we carry around with us. And what happens when we come to die? You're going to read to me Origin of Species? Am I going to sit there looking at a picture of Charles Darwin? Who's going to save me from hell? I want to be in the hands of one who's conquered death. Don't you? Are you someone who surrounds yourself with family and with loved ones? After my father's death, my mother wrote a poem about time and the passing of the seasons. The final line reads this: relentlessly passing day, month, year, time has no meaning. He's not here. How could you move on? There was nowhere to go. The man that she loved for 40 years, he was gone. He's not here. That's how all our relationships must end. But the lover of Jesus can never say that. He is here. He's alive. He lives. He's risen. My friend, what are you thinking about now? Who has your heart? What do you live for? Do your gods live? What happens when the music's over? Will your gods abandon you in the end? Can they save you from your sins? Can they give you a new life? Can they give you a reason to live now? Do you know peace like a river, joy like a fountain? Can they prepare you for death and take you safely to the new world? Are you playing rugby without the ball? My friend, Jesus died the punishing death that we sinners deserve to die. And now he lives. And he lives to save all who come to him. Keep going the way that you're going. Keep living for the things that you're living. And I've got to say, there's no hope for you. But if you come to Jesus Christ, he will give you everlasting life. Life that begins now in this world. Because he's risen. And he's here. And he's speaking to you tonight. And he's ready to save all who call upon him, including you.